Now on Radio 4, Nicholas Parsons presides over a combination of brains determined to talk without interruption for 60 seconds.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my huge pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country but around the world, but to welcome to the show four exciting, dynamic personalities who are going to display their skill with words and language as they try and speak on the subject that I give them, and they try and do that without hesitation, or repetition, or deviation. And those four are, seated on my right, Paul Merton and Sheila Hancock, and seated on my left, Pam Ayres and Mike McShane. Please welcome all four of them. Beside me sits Hayley Sterling. She's going to help me keep the score. She'll blow the whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And we're going to begin with Pam Ayres. No reaction at all. Pam, a lovely subject to begin with. A hat trick. Tell us something about a hat trick in this game, starting now.
One kind of hat trick is that performed by the naffer kind of conjurer when a hat, say a bowler, is rolled across the wrist, over the elbow, up the shoulder, and with a deft flick is catapulted onto the upturned sole of his shoe, which is then dexterously thrown up onto the top of his head to tumultuous applause. I have never rated this trick very much myself, and I rank it alongside the trick with five interlocking rings.
Sheila, challenge.
Trick.
Hat-trick. Well,
hat-trick. Isn't hat-trick one word? No.
No, it's hyphenated, so
oh,
I think...
Okay.
I think it would be unfair to take it away on that one, Sheila. So, Pam, actually, you've got an incorrect challenge, so you get a point for that.
OK.
And you keep the subject.
Thank you.
And there are 26 seconds still available. A hat-trick starting now.
And the production of multicoloured, triangular, conjoined silk handkerchiefs from the closed fist. Another kind of hat trick is that which occurs in cricket when a bowler bowls out three batsmen, one after the other.
There was a hesitation there.
There was a hesitation.
Yeah, it was.
She was just trying to remember how they did it. But you went for 52 seconds in all. Well done, Pam.
Oh.
So, Paul, a correct challenge. There are 8 seconds still available. A hat trick starting now.
One story I remember hearing was about a footballer 100 years ago who scored 3 goals and the local hatters presented him with a bowler.
In this game, whoever is speaking the whistle goes gains an extra point. It was Paul Merton on this occasion. Mike McShane, would you begin the next round? The subject is how to talk to children. Will you tell us something about that delightful subject in this game, starting now?
Talking to children is an art form in itself. First, you must realize the small one is much more intelligent than you and has infinite impatience with your dawdling on and thinking that you're an intelligent person because you're an adult. If you approach them directly as a peer, especially with food and salty snacks, you can lure them into a conversation quite readily. Usually.
Pam, you challenged.
I did think it was a hesitation.
Yeah, afraid, yes, it was a hesitation, yes. So, Pam, you've got in with 33 seconds to go on how to talk to children, starting now.
I like to read to my 2-year-old nephew from Joseph Conrad's Typhoon and Youth, and also Tracts of Shakespeare and Geoffrey Chaucer's Prologue to the Canterbury Tales.
Yes, Sheila.
Deviation, isn't that reading to children as
yes,
opposed
I think
to
that's
talking
a good challenge.
To
yes, you're reading to children then.
I may be wrong about that, but
no,
it just...
No, you are right.
Your crestfallen face makes me sad to take it away from you. But it's a correct challenge, Sheila, and you have the subject 20 seconds available, how to talk to children, starting now.
I think you should talk to children exactly the same way as you talk to adults, using long words so that they learn a bit of vocabulary and not patronising them in any way at all. Hello, how are you? And I think it's very worrying that children seem to put on voices.
So Sheila Hancock was speaking as a whistle wind, gained that extra point, and now Pam, Sheila and Paula all equal in the lead ahead of Mike McShane. And Sheila, we'd like you to begin the next round, and the subject is Greeks bearing gifts, a well-known phrase. Expound on it if you can. 60 seconds starting now.
Well, surely the whole phrase is never trust Greeks who bear gifts. And I think it derives from the Trojan horse. Troy was besieged by the Romans. No, not. What am I talking about?
Mike, you've challenged.
Yes. Deviation?
No, but with hesitation.
With hesitation? Oh. Yeah.
Hesitation.
Yeah, okay, hesitation.
Hesitation, yes, right. It probably was deviation as well, but Mike, that was so quick of you. Thank you, you got in there.
I'm learning to use this thing.
There are 39 seconds for you on the subject of Greeks bearing gifts, starting now.
Greeks bearing gifts is an old adage that's used quite often in the context of Troy. But in my case, it was at a Greek restaurant in Stockton, California, where I first encountered Damathis Papathanathio, who brought me my first moussaka. It was something I did beware later in the day as it ravaged my system and made me quite ill. But at first, it was a free meal. And knowing that my name is McShane, a free meal is the best thing.
Free meal.
Free meal.
Free meal, yes. So, Paul, you've got in there first.
Repetition, yes.
Repetition. A free meal. 13 seconds are still available. You tell us something about Greeks bearing gifts, starting now.
Beware Greeks bearing gifts. Where did they get the money from? Their skin. What did you get from them? Where did you knock this off from? Some stolen bit of nothing you found around the back of the co-op. I'm not touching that. This will turn up on Police 5. Or Crime Watch these days. That's what it's called. Greeks bearing gifts. Do us a favour.
So Paul Merton was then speaking as a whistle wind, gained that extra point. He's taken the lead at the end of the round. And Paul, we'd like you to begin the next round. And the subject is raising the roof. Tell us something about raising the roof.
Thank you.
Starting now.
Well, raising the roof, you hear in theatrical circles, a building has been actually elevated by several inches by the sheer entertainment provided within it. If we look at this magnificent edifice that we sit in now at the British Broadcasting Corporation, we think of all the shows that have been recorded down through the years. Just a minute of...
Talking
too fast.
Mike, you've challenged.
Hesitation.
Yes,
you're right. Yes, he came to a halt. Right. Yep. 40 seconds, Mike, on raising the roof, starting now.
Although raising the roof appears to be a theatrical tradition, it actually comes from Amish farmers who celebrated putting together their barns by holding a party inside of it afterwards. The idea was that the labor itself was rewarded with an excellent evening of music and dancing and singing. But if you're Amish, it was very quiet.
Sheila challenged.
Amish.
Yes. Amish!
You said it earlier, didn't you? Yeah, Amish. It's repetition.
Did you say Amish at the beginning?
Yeah. Yes,
Amish, I did. Amish
community. Well, you're very honest. Thank goodness for that. Sheila, you got in with 18 seconds to go on raising the roof, starting now.
I had a terrible experience with a planning department once when I lived in the country. A man forced me to have my entire roof taken off and built a foot because he said the ceilings were too low. The man next...
Yeah, well, listen, well, listen.
I was going to tell you a really good story of corruption, then.
Good story of corruption we're going to hear, then.
Yeah,
we're going to hear that.
So, Mike, you
back off,
cleverly
you?
Got in with 3 seconds to go. And you've still got the audience with you. 3 seconds on raising the roof, starting now.
These agricultural pioneers often part...
So at the end of that round, Mike McShane speaking to whistle wind gained that extra point. He's now equal with Paul Merton in the lead, one ahead of Sheila Hancock and two ahead of Pam Ayres. Pam, we'd like you to begin the next round, the Land of Nod. Will you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
Most people think the Land of Nod means sleep, but originally the meaning was a place of banishment and exile to which Cain was sent after he lured his brother Abel out into the fields and mercilessly bludgeoned him to death in a vortex of jealous rage. God sent him to the Land of Nod, which is to the east of Eden, which, as you will already recollect, is the name of a favourite novel of mine by John Steinbeck. there he wandered in despair and repentance and said to the Lord, oh, don't send me because everybody will see what I've done, my hideous deed.
Sheena Hancock challenge.
Hesitation.
I know, it was so good. So intelligent and so informative, too.
Thank you.
I knew that. Mm.
Well, tell us more about the Land of Nod, Sheila. You've got 20 seconds still available, starting now.
Well, I'm going to talk about the other Land of Nod, which is what we colloquial talk of as when we go to sleep.
Pam Challenge.
Talk.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yes. Well, listen, Pam. So you've got in there with 15 seconds still available. The Land of Nod, starting now.
And the Lord spake.
A repetition of Lord.
And they had the Lord, yes, he banished him, didn't he? The Lord did. So there are 13 seconds still available, Paul. The Land of Nod starting now.
As I slowly slept into my dreams, I realised that the dreams... rubbish. That was all rubbish.
Yeah, I know.
Dreams.
Yes,
dreams,
that's absolutely right. And Mike, you've cleverly got him with 6 seconds
to
go.
I know it's clever, but...
So, 6 seconds available. Mike, the Land of Nod, starting now.
The Land of Nod was supposed to be a peaceful place, but with Winkin' and Blinkin' banging on...
So, Mike Mashane was speaking as the whistle went, gained an extra point, and he has taken the lead at the end of that. And, Mike, it's your turn to begin. Mm-hmm. And the subject is the Taj Mahal. Tell us something about the Taj Mahal in this game, starting now.
The Taj Mahal is a magnificent edifice carved of marble, put together as a tribute to a dying wife who gave birth to a Mughal emperor's son. It uses an inlay technique called pietra dura, which I actually had used at one time in marquetry, where you take small pieces of wood and insert them into a larger schematic frame. Now, this is...
It was so interesting, too. So, Pam, you challenged first.
It was hesitation.
Yes, it was. Pam, there are 36 seconds still available. The Taj Mahal are starting now.
I often wonder what kind of monument my husband would erect to me. Probably an enormous chicken house made of corrugated iron and graced with a fox-proof fence on the perimeter.
Sheila's challenge.
The subject is the Taj Mahal, not your monument.
That crossrail going underneath.
I think
not far
it was
from the surface, is it?
I think it was a sound of approval for Sheila's challenge.
No, it wasn't. It was disapproval, I think.
Oh, I see what you mean, yes. Sheila, a correct challenge.
How many seconds?
23 seconds. The Taj Mahal, starting now.
The Taj Mahal genuinely is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. And it upset me the last time I went there that everybody was looking at it through mobile phones, not at the actual thing. And the whole edifice is so magnificent.
Mike, challenge.
Repetition, the word whole? Whole life and whole...
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Oh, Mike, you really know how this game's played now, don't you? Right.
So, they've come over here, taking over our panel now. Yeah. It'll be just a McDonald's in a year from now.
Five seconds available, Mike, on the Taj Mahal, starting now.
Ordinarily, the construction of these mausoleums was using brick, but... the.
So, at the end of the round, Mike Mashane was then speaking again as the whistle went, gained that extra point, and he has increased his lead over the head of the other three. And, Sheena Hancock, it's your turn to begin. And the subject now is free spirits. talk on that subject, if you can, starting now.
I really like free spirits. They are my very favourite people in the world because they do what they feel like when they do. And I think I have already repeated do, Mike.
But, Sheila, I wouldn't draw attention to it sometimes.
Well,
don't notice
I want to be on the side of him.
Oh, right. So, Paul, you challenge.
Self-confession.
Self-confession. Yeah. Do.
Repetition.
46 seconds are available, Paul, on free spirits, starting now.
As my eyes gazed around the bar, I realised that the barman had left. This was my opportunity. I sidled underneath the wooden hatch, reached for the glass bottles in front of me. First whiskey, followed by vodka and gin. I was knocking it all back in one big beaker. I was so drunk and it was a huge shock to me when I was told I was about to appear on Just a Minute. I turned to Nicholas Parsons, who was lying in the same gutter as me, and I said, what are we going to do? We're going to be on air very shortly. He brushed down his beautiful blazer, adjusted his stripe tie.
Pam's challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Yes, he's got a beautiful blazer. Is that what you're saying? It's outrageous.
Now, I think he sort of wandered off the subject onto Nicholas's blazer lying in the gutter and wandered away from the subject.
This is the result of the free spirits we've been drinking.
It's a true event.
All right, then.
No, I think I've got to give the benefit of the doubt to Paul, yes. The result of the free spirits we were drinking...
dim view of this, Nicholas.
If I can...
Because the subject where he was punning on the idea of free spirits, then he deviated from that.
Listen, he's getting above himself now.
What's happened to this money? It's turned into dollars. What the hell?
He's taking over the chair now.
Bloody Mr. Poppins, where'd you get that paper book? Oh, Bert, you're such a free spirit. I know, I can't help it. It's because I'm a chimney cleaner.
Pam, if I can redress the balance.
Is this why we fought the Second World War? Oh, yeah. Which, Mike, for your information, started in 1939. 1939.
Well, anybody in the audience have anything to say on the subject?
We should have brought West to Trafalgar Square if it wasn't for us.
Oh, right.
I love the way this show brings people together.
Right, so, Pam, if I can redress the balance and give the benefit of the doubt to you, I will, but this time it goes to Paul, and he still has 9 seconds on free spirits starting now.
I was reading about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and he was very much a free spirit, setting out to be a doctor at first, but then changing his mind and gripping hold of literature.
So, at the end of that round, Paul Merton was speaking as a whistle when gained that extra point. He's caught up with Mike McShane. They're both in the lead now, just ahead of Sheila Hancock and just ahead of Pam Ayres. And, Paul, we're back with you to begin. And the subject is something right up your street, I'm sure. Mrs. Beaton. You've written it down?
Yeah.
Would you talk on the subject? 60 seconds if you need it, starting now.
Mrs. Beaton was a character from mid-18th, 19th century London, in fact, and she wrote the first book that was called Mrs. Beaton's Guide to Household Management, I believe. And what was revolutionary...
Sheila,
I believe.
Oh, yes, yes.
Believe too much.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Sheila, correct challenge. You're in there on Mrs. Beaton. And 50 seconds available starting now.
From what I know of her, she was a quite extraordinary woman. She had lots of children and a very difficult life. A dodgy husband who pretended he wrote some of the stuff. And she, in fact, didn't...
Repetition?
Pardon?
Repeated?
Yes.
The word she?
She, yes.
Repetition.
Yes. Sharp challenge.
She? Repetition of shoes.
He's getting very sharp on the game now, isn't he? Right.
Three-letter words are in.
On that occasion, with such an emphasis, I will grant it to you, Mike.
Thank you.
Mrs. Beaton is the subject, and there are 37 seconds starting now.
With all the children that Mrs. Beaton had, the one that she loved the most was Cecil Beaton, who used to take delightful photographs of the food, dressing them in elegant gowns and photographing them in stark black and white...
Paul challenge.
Repetition of quite a long word, photographing.
Ah. Oh, yes. I'd like to know how you dress the food in gowns.
You must have seen a tart dressed up when I saw that. I stopped myself then. Nearly killed me, but I stopped myself.
Well done, Paul. You have another point. You have the subject. 25 seconds. Mrs. Beaton starting now.
The reason why we still remember it is because for the first time, recipes as we now accept them in books were produced in that form by Mrs. Beaton. So it was rather revolutionary, although I believe she gathered a lot of material from past writers and put it together in this one volume. However, she was naturally the first to become hugely well known for her culinary skills. She would...
Pam Challenge.
Oh, well, if we're talking about she...
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. No, yeah. Mike had it on she before. Yeah. You've got it on
Thank
she
you,
now.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Absolutely. And you've got in with 1 second to go.
Oh.
So, a correct challenge. 1 second. Mrs. Beaton, Pam, starting now.
I have a book of Mrs. Beaton's.
And... we're back with you to start, Pam, actually.
Oh, gosh.
Yes. Right. And, Pam, the subject is The Mother of All Invention. Are you writing it down? No, it doesn't matter.
No.
The Mother of All Invention is the subject starting now.
Necessity is the mother of all invention, which is to say that only in a crisis would you come up with the remedy. For instance, consider a man slumped on his sofa in front of the television. No, he does not think of leaping out of the upstairs window. However, if flames are licking the buttocks of his pyjamas, he may quickly invent a way of stringing together...
Paul Challenge.
Well, strictly speaking, pyjamas don't have buttocks. The buttocks of your pyjamas. You don't say, oh, well, I've got... Look at the arse on that pyjama.
No, the buttocks belong to his body, darling, I think. So.
I just thought it was a good word. And I didn't really want to say if flames were licking his buttocks, because it sounded a bit unsavoury.
It's one of those Marmite things, isn't it? You either love it or you...
Pam, I gave it against you before and said that Paul had the benefit of the doubt. And I know what you wanted to say, but didn't quite get to it. So I'm going to give you your benefit of the doubt now and see.
Oh, thank you.
And say you still have the mother of all invention and a point, of course. 37 seconds starting now.
Consider early man struggling as he did with great stone plinths towards such sites as Stonehenge, Great Rollright and the Pyramids.
Sheila Challenge.
Great.
The two greats.
Oh, blow, yeah.
Sheila, you have 27 seconds on the mother of all invention starting now.
My mother was the most inventive woman. She would have inventive jumpers that we wore that she made out of unraveled...
Mike Chum.
Oh. No?
Are we really not allowed to say she now?
Well...
Do pronouns,
we usually let them go, Mike.
I'm sorry, I didn't know that. Okay.
No, it's all right, but you did it before and we gave it to you, so I'll have to do it again. And you have 18 seconds on the mother of all inventions, starting now.
Inventiveness is... Hey, give it up gladly.
Right. Paul.
Hesitation, sir.
That was a hesitation, Paul. So 16 seconds still available. And you have the mother of all inventions, starting now.
I stood looking at the aeroplane I had built. The Wright brothers next door were listening to my plans, but I had every reason to beat them to the sky. I strapped myself into the wooden contraption, looked up towards the window. I thought, I'll never get through that, but I gave it a go.
Right, so we're moving into the final round.
Oh.
What a lovely audience you are.
Yeah.
So I think you'd like to know the state of play as we do so. It's very, very close. In a very strong third place are Pam Ayres and Sheila Hancock together, but only just 3 points ahead is Mike Mashane, and 1 point ahead of him is Paul Merton. And, Mike, it's your turn to begin, and the subject, marmalade. Mike, I don't know how you feel about marmalade, but talk on the subject. 60 seconds starting now.
I love the sticky, sweet, unctuous, citrus flavor of marmalade. There is nothing more enjoyable than getting up in the morning, cutting a slice of bread, and spreading it thick like sunshine on a doorstop. Once when I had marmalade, I was smitten forever. I often go to Fortnum and Mason's, where they have a wall of it standing with various flavors added to it.
Pam Challenge.
I think it's a repetition of flavor.
Yes, there's flavor, right. 36 seconds available. Tell us.
Even flavors.
Ooh.
It was plural and then singular.
Yes.
I did plural and singular.
Yes. That's not repetition.
No, in that case, I retract my challenge.
So, Mike, with an incorrect challenge, you still have marmalade, and you've got 36 seconds available starting now.
I've found that the best quality of the truly British object is when it's made by an English mother. Yes, when it's...
Pam, challenge.
Isn't that a repetition of English?
Yes, it is. Yes. So, Pam, correct challenge. You've got in with 27 seconds to go on marmalade, starting now.
Someone once told me a tale about marmalade, that the name came from a French woman called Mary who was ill, hence Mary Malade. I personally think this is a load of old cobblers.
Sheila, challenge.
She was French. She was Marie Malade, not Mary.
I'm saying that it became bastardised over a period of time.
Well, I mean, you can still call her Mary.
But if you said it quickly, Mary Malade, I'm saying is this person said that people said Mary Malade and that it became abbreviated to Marmalade. That's what she told me. As I say, I thought it was...
You've got the benefit of the doubt,
Mary
Malade. 15 seconds, Pam, on marmalade starting now.
I like to make all kinds of marmalade from citrus fruits, including oranges, lime, grapefruit and kumquats. I don't really... use them, but I just like the name. However, I don't like to use...
Paul Chance.
Oh, yeah.
Repetition of like.
Yeah. Like to use, yeah. Yes. Well, right. Yes. So, Paul, you've got in with 1 second to go. Oh. And the subject is marmalade, starting now.
Oranges from Seville!
So, I said that was to be the last round, and certainly it was. And when these last four were together, it was Sheila Hancock who came out on top. And she was our winner. This time she's trailed a little way behind Pam Ayres, who did extraordinarily well. But she was 2 points behind Mike McShane, who trailed a lot, but he did so well this time around. But he didn't quite catch up with Paul Merton, who was in the lead and kept it. And so we say, Paul, you are the winner this week.
Yeah!
It only remains for me to say thank you to these four fine players of the game, Paul Merton, Sheila Hancock, Pam Ayres and Mike McShane. We are grateful to our producer, Victoria Lloyd. I'm grateful to Hayley Sterling, who's helped me with the score, blown her whistle with such style when the 60 seconds elapsed. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this amazing game. And we are very grateful to this lovely audience here who cheered us on our way magnificently. From them, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and the team, goodbye. Tune in again the same time when we play Just a Minute.
Next Monday at the same time, Paul Merton returns alongside Marcus Brigstocke, Lucy Beaumont and Giles Brandreth.